mind. All source and all manifestation. The topic to which these two facts are applied are not important. If there is an understanding that all source being one topic and all manifestation being the completion of all existence are in full operation regardless of what appears to be matter or mortal mind making a cloud on the horizon. Those items are defined as one's view of what is true. And if the belief is that matter and mortal mind are reality, then it affects the experience by those who believe it. But again, that is only the experience as viewed by the individual that is believing it. Or it could be observers that are believing it. In recent times, meaning in the last few days, weeks, months, or even a year or two, there has been the belief of floods, fires, earthquakes, threat of nuclear war, electrical failures, water shortages, God-given freedoms dissipated, homes destroyed, lives lost, individuals hurt, damaged, injured, things that are considered material, driven into chaos. All one has to do is to open up thought to the suggestion of what is confronting the population from sources that had previously been expected to be reliable, to see that there is chaos that is immeasurable. What were the sources that were considered to be reliable? The physical eyes, ears, feeling, tasting, smelling. The senses, all of which had been believed to be material. And therein lies the problem. There is one duty that one must continuously pursue, and that is filtering. Determining the difference between what is true and false that appears to be surrounding one's atmosphere. That could be the atmosphere that one feels is controlling oneself, or what one is observing that could have an influence on something outside of oneself. But is there really anything outside of oneself? When Jesus saw someone who was apparently to material belief, experiencing something unlike God, whether they were blind, dumb, had leprosy, apparently dead, sinful, he immediately and automatically assessed the situation and did a filtering process, which was instantaneous, to determine what was really true and what was not. Shakespeare is quoted as saying, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." Other quotes along that line from various ones over the years has stated, "What we see is what we are." And in reverse, "What we are is what we see." Two different individuals looking at the same identical individual or object or event can conclude totally different observations and therefore different opinions, different conclusions, and therefore act differently about what they have individually interpreted or translated. Jesus saw the perfect man when others would be seeing a sinning mortal man. When Mary Magdalene entered the room where Jesus was being entertained by Simon the Pharisee, the others in the room wondered how she got in there, what she was doing there, and why would Jesus permit her even to come close to him, let alone wash his feet. He saw her in a totally different light than what the others in the home saw, and particularly Simon the Pharisee, the host, who had not only failed to provide Jesus the courtesy of having his feet cleaned, which was a common courtesy in those days because there were no paved highways, and so one's feet would be getting quite dirty walking in probably open sandals or even barefoot. So she not only performed that task, but she did it with such a love that Jesus recognized that she was already forgiven by divine love for any mar on her reputation due to her prior life. By prior, I mean before entering into the atmosphere of love where Jesus was inhabiting in his own consciousness at that moment, even though those around him we're in a totally different dimension. And remember, Mary Magdalene was one of the few that was loyal to Jesus to the point that she was one of a handful that were at attendance and at the foot of the cross when he was crucified. John and the mother of Jesus and a handful of others. Out of the thousands or tens of thousands that he taught and devoted his life to uplifting, that's all that showed up. So it's obvious that her healing was complete and not just a flash in the pan where she was putting on some kind of an act for one day. Whether the atmosphere that we feel we are observing is inside the home of a Pharisee, such as Simon was described as being, or whether we are in the middle of what appears to be a drastic flood or storm, hurricane, whether we are supposedly a target for a nuclear bomb, doesn't matter what the situation is, as advertised by mortal mind, by way of suggestion, which we can either accept or we can take a stand for the kingdom of God. We can listen to that radio station that Mr. Winslow described as KOG, that is constantly, continuously without interruption, broadcasting the truth about God and man and the relationship and all existence. There was a testimony that was published about a couple that were robbed. They filtered at the thought of a suggestion that they were being robbed, and they decided to cling tenaciously to the truth about God and his idea, his reflection, man. That was not only foremost, but it was the total focus of their thought. As a result, the fellow did leave and took valuables with him. But he returned, apologized sincerely for what he had done. And when he returned, he had with him all the things he had stolen. Even though he had left with things that did not belong to him, the couple did not give up. They clinged tenaciously to the truth about God and God's manifestation, man. Everyone needs to do that with every situation that tries to deflect our focus. Anything that tries to erroneously influence what in reality is peace and fulfillment and beautiful activities unfolding, balance and harmony, enveloping the entire atmosphere, omnipresent, no space where God is not. That needs to be a fact that is reiterated at the moment that anything unlike God appears to be making an attempt to influence the truth that all is harmonious without interruption. In the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, she states on page 403, under the topic Errors, Power, Imaginary, you command the situation. If you understand that mortal existence is a state of self-deception and not the truth of being, mortal mind is constantly producing on mortal body the results of false opinions, and it will continue to do so until mortal error is deprived of its imaginary powers by truth, which sweeps away the gossamer web of mortal illusion. The most Christian state is one of rectitude and spiritual understanding, and this is best adapted for healing the sick. Never conjure up some new discovery from dark forebodings regarding disease and then acquaint your patient with it. The only patient is consciousness. The one we should be concerned with is our own. Dark forebodings is referring to what was previously mentioned about suggestions. Never conjure up some new discovery. Are we trying to make a reality or permitting a reality to be made of something that has no foundation? We cannot make it real. We can only view it as real. Its character doesn't change. It came from nothing, and it is nothing. The most Christian state is one of rectitude and spiritual understanding. That's the filtering, the correction that must continuously take place because of what the first part of this quotation stated. And that is that mortal mind is constantly producing on mortal body the results of false opinions. Mary Baker Eddy instructs us how to reverse this. She says, until mortal air is deprived of its imaginary powers by truth, which sweeps away the gossamer web of mortal illusion. Susan Mack, a very skilled and talented songwriter and performer with a lovely voice, entitled one of her compositions, Choose Good. And the lyrics stated clearly that the opposite of good is not evil, but illusion, false impression. That's exactly what Mary Baker Eddy is stating in this quotation from 403. Mortal mind is constantly producing on mortal body the results of false opinions. Not fact. The opposite of God, the opposite of incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love does not announce truth. It announces the opposite, illusion. We have to open our thought to station KOG that is announcing truth all the time, and we have to accept it. We have to reject anything that is the opposite of 100% godlike. No degrees, don't slide down even 0.001%. Stick to the truth about what God is, and that includes God's manifestation, which includes man and all existence. The harmony that comes from the self-operating divine principle is omnipresent. The spiritual senses, defined as soul, provides the identity to us so we can see the truth and therefore know immediately something that is contrary thereto. Like a wonderful conductor that has such a sense of sound that has been cultivated, that in a large orchestra, if there is one performer that is not delivering to the standard that should be delivered in the musical production, is letting a false sound permeate throughout the atmosphere, the conductor immediately recognizes that there's a problem. There's a false impression trying to be real, trying to be accepted as part of a perfect composition and a perfect performance with harmony and melody and all of the various parts that make up music, the time, the tempo, the volume, the key, the chords, the sequence of everything occurring at exactly the right time. All these variables in music that comprise the laws of music, that are utilizing the elements, the notes. If something is wrong, it can be detected, and that applies to everything. Mathematics has defined the truth about addition, such as 2 plus 3 does not equal 4, or 4.9, or 5.1, or 6.1, or 7.6, or anything else except 5. That is the only thing that can be known about 2 plus 3. A child that is just learning the mathematical tables, if they still do that in this day and age, may make a mistake and think that 2 plus 3 is 6. But does that make it true? Can the child know that? Can anyone know that? One cannot know something that is false. One can be tricked into believing it is true, but does that change the fact that it is false? With present technology termed CGI, which is computer-generated imagery, one can be thinking that they are watching one person give a speech when in fact it is an actor. It's happening all the time. People that are believed to be alive and are not, can be tricked into thinking that they are still alive and they are performing an act or giving a speech. Mortal mind is constantly producing on mortal body the results of false opinions. Is the threat of nuclear war, or any kind of war, or any kind of discord, a storm, fire, flood, is it any different than CGI? Is God dead? And is a so-called devil wearing a mask, a complete rubber suit that covers his whole body, perhaps, that gives the appearance of a handsome or a beautiful person with a lovely voice or a strong voice? Is that what we are being tricked into believing, that the truth is being delivered to us? Over the years, and it didn't begin just in the last few days or weeks or months or even years, it was occurring in Mary Baker Eddy's day over 100 years ago. where the press was not honest. And she established a committee whose purpose was to correct the false statements that were made about Christian Science. She called it the Committee on Publication. Whether they are doing their job today is another story. But she knew the need was there over 100 years ago. We must be our own committee on publication. We must filter what we are hearing, separating truth from error. The spiritual definition of seeing and hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling is just that. We are supposed to be perceiving the truth. Not what is presented, but what is true after it is filtered, separating the chaff from the wheat at the onset of the effort to gain our attention. The director of one of the government agencies who was one of the star graduates of the military institution said that what he was a director of, and it's very commonly termed three-letter initials, had training courses on how to lie, cheat, and steal. And he compares that to what he was taught in the institution of the military where he was trained, which was the opposite. They supposedly train their cadets to not tolerate a lie or to cheat or to steal, but a moral standard of integrity, and to not tolerate those who do violate their code of ethics. He left the agency that he was the director of because he didn't see any way to correct it. It seemed to be the standard, and he was an oddball because he didn't fit in, and he was supposed to be the director, managing everyone else. He asked the President of the United States, who had appointed him to that duty, to clean it up, to drain the swamp, and he could see no way to get it done, and so he requested the President of the United States to, quote, get me out of here. Mary Baker Eddy has made it very clear that we have to work out our own salvation. Jesus, as was stated previously, was left alone at the cross, basically, except for a handful of people. He was working out his own salvation. And of course, to be an example for anyone who would pay attention to what his life consisted of. He worked out his own resurrection and his ascension. Get me out of here to him meant to rise totally above it, to heal it in his own consciousness, so that he no longer believed that there was anything material or mortal that existed. And near the end of his visible experience on planet Earth, he told his disciples not to touch him. He didn't want to mix. He did not want to mix. He would not mix matter with spirit. He was already on that spiritual plane, and he could not mix with the human. And therefore he stated what may have sounded to be cruel, to be a necessary statement of fact. Cannot mix matter with spirit. Mary Baker Eddy warned us about the period that we are in right now, we're experiencing Sodom and Gomorrah. But do we individually need to be pulled down to accept that as the real? Do we need to lower the standard and accept as normal an imperfect atmosphere and everything in it? There is information that is publicly available about what is being stated about the circumstances that we're being presented with. It's available on the internet from various sources with documentation, imagery, and everything that is needed to make an intelligent decision therefrom. But is one willing to do their research, or do they just accept the state of emotionalism that is advertised to one's thought? Mind control is a big, common, popular exercise that is in full force. The human mind doesn't even comprehend what is taking place and how it is being manipulated. It's not any different than it was when Mary Baker Eddy wrote the textbook. It may be more amplified, but she could not even get Science and Health published, the very first edition in 1875, until she had written a chapter on animal magnetism. She couldn't understand why the publisher was not publishing the various chapters that she had provided. And she thought the book would be ready to be totally published. No matter what kind of effort she made on a material basis to ask him to get it finished, nothing could be done about it. Until she listened to the final revelation about what needed to be added to it, that chapter on animal magnetism. And as soon as she got that completed, she was in transit on the train system, and she met the publisher at one of the train stops. He had gotten off and ready to board another train, and she had gotten off of the train she was on because there needed to be a change to go to on a different train to go to him. And they met in the train station. He had everything else ready for her and wanted her approval, and she had the final chapter for him to add to it. No matter what kind of effort she made, she couldn't get him to that point. It's like the retroactive healing that was discovered by Frederick L. Rawson. He discovered that if one got close enough to God, realizing that there was no concept of time, that he could be involved in seeing the fruition of retroactive healing, whereby the moment that someone notified him or made an attempt to notify him that there was a problem that they wanted help on. And back in those days, there was apparently no telephone way to do it. This was 100 years ago. And his very first case was his sister, who sent him a letter soliciting his assistance on healing. And the moment she put the letter in the postal, I don't know whether it was Pony Express or what, but the moment she put the letter in the postal service, she was healed. He didn't even know that she was in need. But when he got the letter, he had decided that he was going to try his new revelation out to see if it worked. And I don't know how much time went by, whether it was one day or one week or whatever, but the healing was effective at the time that she mailed the letter requesting assistance, which was some time before he ever received the letter. But his closeness to God and the concept that there is no time, that the healing is already complete, thinking along those lines, brought the result that was just described. There's more complete details about this in his writings, which are on the website. In two different books, he talks about retroactive healing and describes a particular situation that was the first one. And after that, he said there were hundreds that were completed on a retroactive time basis. He saw the perfect man effective at the time the need was there, or at least effective at the time that they decided that they would give Christian Science an opportunity to have an influence on their life. Many that have been healed are cases where they had no other alternative because they were told that it couldn't be healed. One needs to think of every suggestion that is illusion, as Susan Mack describes it in her lyrics, and Mary Baker Eddy made clear in this quotation that we've been covering on page 403. We need to think of those suggestions as something that needs to be healed. Even though it may not have had an influence on us at that moment, it's the thought in advance that brings about the unfavorable result, if we accept it. If we let the salesman get his foot in the door, it's too late. Or let's put it this way, it will take a lot more effort to heal the situation in consciousness than it would be if we don't let it enter consciousness, but reject it at the door of consciousness. The picture that is commonly shown of Jesus, where he's knocking on a door, I think of that as being an effort of him knocking on the door of consciousness to humanity. He wants to wake us up and offer us the truth. He wants to open the door and give us an opportunity to benefit from his life's experience of proving that truth is real and error is unreal. That 2 + 3 = 5. It doesn't equal 4.9 or 5.1 or any other number except 5. The fact. He's knocking on the door of consciousness to awaken us to the fact about ourselves or a situation that is trying to influence our thought, which is not truth. It does not matter what the topic is. We need to focus on the fact that mind is the only source, and the source includes the manifestation. What kind of a God would only be operating in one location or for the benefit of one person or at a particular hour of the day but not another hour of the day or moment of time? In other words, when there is an appearance of a suggestion of an accident or a storm or a threat of some kind that would disrupt peace and harmony, is the omnipresent God all of a sudden not going to be available to change the appearance in our consciousness? Is he going to operate for some things and not others, like insurance companies? They put an exclusion in there that says you are not covered for acts of God. Trying to blame God for certain kinds of things, such as a flood. I talked to somebody on the phone just in the last day that said that their insurance covered them if it was not from a flood, but it covered them from the effect of a storm. That was a wind, but not from a flood. they had an exclusion in their insurance policy for their home. Acts of God. Can you imagine the corrupt industry trying to say that, well, this is an act of God, so we're not going to cover that kind of a catastrophe. If we are attuned to truth and we are striving to exercise the intelligence and the wisdom and the knowing of the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, then we're going to be much less likely to be tricked into being deceived. Like the conductor. If there's one instrument that is being played with a sour note, just one note, the conductor can sense it. He can hear it. It's like the gentleman that was living in the woods, and he was invited to come to the big city. It was a very strange environment for him. But for whatever circumstances, he did come. And he was at a party. Very boisterous crowd. A lot of joy and typical things at a party of whatever. And he all of a sudden stated to one of the people at the table where he was, he said, "There's a cricket in here." And the other people at the table asked him, "How can you possibly hear a cricket with all this sound from the music and the laughing and everything that's going on?" He said, "No, I hear a cricket." And they said it two or three times so that the tables around them heard them talking. And pretty soon the whole room got quiet. The orchestra stopped playing and everybody listened to what they were saying. And he walked over on the other side of the room and picked up a cricket. We have to listen for the voice of truth talking to us, no matter what the noise is that is surrounding us, no matter what the atmosphere that is trying to make an influence on us erroneously. We have to listen for that still, small voice. Under all circumstances, we cannot afford to let ourselves be tricked. We have to work out our own salvation. Don't worry about the other fellow's salvation. I was attending a church service one time many years ago, and there was a lady that gave a testimony. And I'd never heard anyone, even though I had attended church my entire life up to that point, I'd never heard anyone give a testimony like she did, because she was in the practice of Christian Science healing. And someone had called her for assistance. And she said that she had to correct her thought. Her own thought. The practitioner had to correct her own thought about the situation that was presented to her. She didn't say she had to heal anything. She didn't say she had to correct someone else's thought, the one that was calling her, for example, or whatever might have been causing the commotion, whether it was a doctor's opinion about an illness or whether it was an accident or a relationship situation, whatever it was. She didn't say that she had to correct anything exterior to her own thought. And that's how the healing came about. Because she had to purify her own thought to know that there was no reality in the situation that was being presented to her. And when that was clear enough in her thought, and she justified to herself that that could not be true, and she was one that was devoting her life to the healing work and studying probably in all of her spare time that she wasn't on the phone or whatever. In other words, she was cultivating a consciousness of perfection continuously. And when she had cleared her thought about that particular situation, it touched the individual whose life was being affected, and they were healed. I'd never heard of such a thing before, that the healing practitioner was correcting their own thought. That's exactly what Mary Baker Eddy is saying on that page, 403. Mortal mind is constantly producing on mortal body the results of false opinions. Now, mortal body is, in fact, that very same person defined to me body was everything about our lives. Our body is everything about our lives. It's our entire consciousness and our entire experience that we are involved in. That is our body. If we're married, it's our wife. If we have children, it's our children, our family. If we're in a business, it includes our business. No matter what our business is, it includes it. Any organization that we might be involved in, such as a parent might be attending parent-teacher associations, PTA meetings, or whatever. If we're a musician, we're in an orchestra. Our atmosphere with the orchestra is our body, part of our body. If we're in the kitchen eating or preparing food as a homemaker or whatever the situation might be, taking a shower, driving a car, our entire realm of activities and our thought and speech, it's all our body. So when she says that it's constantly producing on mortal body the results of false opinions, we're dealing with it all the time. With everything. Mind is the only creative source and the creative impulse from mind visits the qualities of intelligence, wisdom, and knowing, and the quality of action, and produces performance. There's the orchestra. mind gives us the orchestra, the whole orchestra. And a measurement of that performance is called power. Like a car, how much horsepower does it have? Or the engine, how much horsepower? Well, that's based on performance. In reality, it's based on a measurement of performance live. They put an engine on a dynamo. And that's a measurement of the performance. We have to measure our moment by making it worthwhile. We have to utilize our moment so that it is devoted to a worthwhile moment. And that moment then becomes power. Mary Baker Eddy states that the only power obtainable is the good that we do and embody. There's that word body again. What we do and embody, the good that we do and embody, gives us the only power obtainable. What are we embodying? What are we putting in our experience that is a performance of good? Because that's where our power comes from. It's already there from the divine mind, but our experience of it is going to be based on what we do in our experience to have that be a benefit in our experience, which affects everyone that our experience touches. And we have to make sure we protect our own consciousness so that we don't let a dire experience that is out there in the atmosphere of negative thought have an impact on us. And of course, we include all humanity when we say us. It's not a selfish me. It is all humanity that we must include that cannot be touched by a negative atmosphere. Faraday was a genius on electricity. Tesla was another one back in the days of Mary Baker Eddy. He walked down the street with Mark Twain holding a light bulb, and it was lit. All the energy that is ever needed is already available, and it's free. He proved it over 100 years ago. This is known information, but it's being concealed by an industry that wants to make a profit by selling energy. Our business is to know the truth, not to be fooled, not to be tricked, but to know the truth. We need to be exercising the intelligence and the wisdom and the knowing of the one infinite, incorporeal, divine, supreme mind. In Genesis 1, it says, God made man in his image and likeness. Are we striving to be that image and likeness? It doesn't happen if we are passive. We don't get the benefit of that image and likeness if we are passive. What good are we doing and embodying to experience heaven right here and now, as it's stated in the book of Revelation that was dictated to John by Jesus himself on the island of Patmos, as explained by that wonderful author by the name of Putnam. On our website also, 10 Bible lessons. And he also is the only one that covered the Council of Nicaea back in the year of 325, where there was a political decision made about religion that wiped out what true Christianity was really about up until that time. And it was promoted through the media all these years since 325 AD until Mary Baker Eddy broke the ice. In 1866, when she fell on the ice, that was not intended to be stated the way it came out, but that's what happened. She broke the frigid thought about Christianity and brought the truth forth and discovered the science that Jesus used in what were called miracles, but were really scientific healings. And she's the one that discovered exactly what that was all about. And Mr. Putnam describes the Dark Ages and why they came about. As stated in the beginning, does not matter what the topic is. The one fact that there is one mind, not 8.3 billion or however many people there are supposed to be on planet Earth, not to mention who might be occupying other planets, if there are any. We have to understand, we have to cultivate, we have to pursue the fact that there's only one mind, one. Not a mind in every different individual that's walking around, not 8 billion minds, there's one. That's the one that proved that everything we look at when we look up in the sky, assuming we're not looking at chemtrails that were man-manufactured, or let's say mortal mind manufactured, the deceit of what is really true about the sky. Do we really think that there was a human that designed all of the planets and all the stars and the sun and everything else? We only see one that we call a sun. The rest of them are lighting up other areas, apparently. I haven't been there. We each are a raindrop in a sea of water, or a little parcel of air, A-I-R, in the atmosphere of thought. or a pebble in a pile of rocks, or a grain of sand. But we are important, because together we make up the total. All the grains of sand make up the total beach, all the beaches, all the sand. We each need to work out our own salvation, and as we do that, we are adding to the salvation of universal thought. It is like the great sequoias, the redwoods, in the northwest part of the U.S., up around California and the northern part of California on the west coast, where the roots of these trees meet with each other, and they're not very deep. They're shallow roots on these mammoth trees, and they meet with each other and form a bond. And as a result of getting strength from each other, they are able to resist fire and storm. And when some lumberjack goes in there and cuts a redwood down, it weakens the whole group. We need to be planting seeds to strengthen the group, not cutting them down, not destroying the good. We have infinite opportunities, continuous opportunities, to have the good be embodied within our thought and add to the atmosphere. And that's what we need to do, each and every one of us. We can't wait for the other guy to do it. Our security, our peace, our harmony, our lives are in our hands. The tools are there. The biggest tool of all is the fact that God is all in all source, which includes all manifestation, and that there's only one incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And spirit is the substance. That's the only substance there is. Matter, so-called matter, the belief of matter, is not substance. It's not substantial. Spirit is substantial. Cannot be penetrated, cannot be diluted, deflected, interfered with, destroyed, reversed. We have all the tools. Are we going to utilize them and make a difference? Amen.